We're entirely ready to remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all people we had harmed and willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for his knowledge and for his will and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening of the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us explain, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is, we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. And the principles we have set down in guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if we were thought.
The 12 Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous will be read by Mark.
Go, Mark.
And Mark, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
The 12 Traditions short form. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants that do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Least problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
I have a few short announcements to make. Encore Audio is taping speakers and other meetings at this conference. CDs may be purchased at their booth. Please join me in welcoming Encore Audio to our roundup. The AV Roundup Committee would like to remind all attendees to please remember we are responsible for carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let our word and actions reflect our gratitude towards the staff and students of Antelope Valley College. This is a public school, and there is no smoking allowed on campus. If you need to smoke, please walk out to Avenue K. We have marathon meetings running until midnight tonight, so please check your schedule for the times. And then following the meeting tonight at 10 p.m., we're having a DJ that's sure to be epic. Please stay and join for the fun and the fellowship. And it now gives me pleasure to introduce Todd from Runaway Bay, Texas.
Thank you very much. My name is Todd. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Todd.
I'm from Texas. Can't you tell by my cool-ass mustache right here? I'm actually like, I need to be here with you guys. I miss you. I'm from California. That's where I live 34 years. I miss my mountain. I don't know if any of you know where Idlewild is in San Jacinto Mountains, but I've lived in Idlewild for many years. Chaired twice a year the Back to Basics Men's Retreat up in Idlewild. My home group was the Robber's Roost. The Robber's Roost is a I don't know about your home group, dudes, but mine's the number one home group in the world. What? I remember talking about a bunch of gangsters, man. Hells Angels, Vagos, Mongols, Mexican, Laeme, you know what I mean? Some painters and some Marine snipers, you know, just my kind of guys, right? And I had a great sponsor for 22 years. His name was Bob. And Bob had a sponsor that was a very special friend of mine until we lost him. His name was Kip Collins. Kip had a sponsor named Pat, who we also lost. Pat had a sponsor, my great-great-grand sponsor, Harry H. Harry died with almost 60 years of sobriety. Harry was sponsored by a guy by the name of Jim Burwell, who wrote The Vicious Cycle, who was sponsored by a guy named Bob, who was sponsored by Bill. That was my sponsorship line. I miss my home group, and I miss that sponsorship line all the way back to the beginning. All the history of Southern California H&I Intergroup and being part of the H&I committee and knowing people at every little corner and every Atlano club all up and down Southern California. And I traded it all to move to Texas. No state tax, homie. Shows you how much I cared. Okay. I miss them. I do. I miss them. But I've got a new home group now. See, that's what I did when I first got to Texas. Very first thing I did is I looked for a men's group. It was about 80 guys called Show Me Men's Group. I found a dude, an old, crotchety, angry, gripey, accountable guy with 46 years of sobriety named Tom R. And I asked him if he would guide me. What I really liked about Tom is he has a sponsor. I need to call that guy. That's an old guy, right? You know what I mean? I need to make sure I check in on him. And that guy just lost his sponsor. I love men who have a sponsor, who have a sponsor, who have a sponsor. Men who aren't above the process that got us here and continue to do what they got us here so they can keep going someplace they've never been. And that's why I'm here. I want to have a new experience. I hope you get something out of this, but I want you to know that from a selfish standpoint, I hope to feel mighty sober when I get done, you know? So I have a sobriety date. It's June 3, 1993. I haven't had a drink in a little over 30 years. I do have a sponsor. I have a big book, and I don't know if it looks like yours, but mine's tattered and torn and highlighted, and it's got cartoons in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's my home book. And I've got a home group, a book. I've got a God of my understanding. You gave me all these things. And I don't know. Anybody here read the big book? Just curious. I don't know if you're just toting it around. But if you read it over and over again, you'll notice that there's certain sentences or paragraphs that start to show up as like a, almost like your totem, like your mantra. You know what I mean? And on the top of 63 is mine, and it says, "When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed." And I don't know how remarkable is defined by you, but I've got alcoholism. And if alcoholism was active in me right now and it decided that I was going to take a drink, if it told me it was time to take a drink, I wouldn't be here. I would literally stop this conversation, walk out the door and take a drink. And alcoholism would decide how long I was going to drink for. It would tell me when I could stop drinking. Then it would tell me it's time to start drinking again. See, alcoholism controls if and when and how much and for how long I drink. But alcoholism just doesn't tell me what to drink. Alcoholism tells me what you meant by that. Alcoholism tells me we're not going to bed tonight. We're going to watch all the episodes of The Office. You know what I mean? Tonight. Alcoholism tells me I don't need that job anymore. They don't appreciate me. Alcoholism tells me to grow my hair like Jesus, marry a stripper, and move to Oklahoma. Alcoholism is in charge of my thinking and my decisions. And if alcoholism was active in me, it would not give me permission to be in this room with you. It would not allow me or give me a pass to walk through these front doors. Something more powerful than alcoholism has had to show up in my life right now just long enough for me to be with you. And it must have happened to you too, because we're all in the room together. This is remarkable. And when I feel like if I do something, if I take some action right now, I could continue to access that great power that cares to keep me out of alcoholism's grip. You know, another way of being defined by a remarkable, my diagnosis as a teenager was schizophrenia, schizoaffective psychotic. I know you're going, yay! He's our speaker. A lot of common sense in the committee, right? Okay. So I have I suffer from what's called emotional numbing. I used to rock myself. You'll see me once in a while touch my fingers. I would get dressed in the dark. I never looked at myself in a mirror. I consistently, continuously try to take my own life. I could hear the trees talk. And when I looked at you, and if you looked at me and you stared at me too long, I started to get a feeling that you wanted to hurt me, so that I would turn that into a desire to want to kill you. You know what I mean? There was a dude sitting right where you're sitting. I was at a Canadian conference, and I was like, and if you look at me too long, I was going to kill you. And dude was like, crap. I'm much better. You guys know where Mesa, Arizona is? Anybody know where Mesa is? I'm so sorry. Okay, so I was homeless in a park in Mesa, Arizona called Pioneer Park, right across the street from the Mormon Temple, okay? And way back then, there used to be a plane and a train in that park. Now there's just a train. I used to sleep in the fuselage of that plane. You guys know what a Huffy is? I had a badass little girl's Huffy, a little light blue one with stickers and stuff on it, all my junk and gray garbage bags. You guys have to picture me, man. I'm 6'1". I was 137 pounds. I look like a used Q-tip, okay? I had white parachute pants. You can see my underwear through it, dude. I wore a trench coat. I had a mullet. I looked good. You know what I mean? I was that dude that was like a pumping up and down Main Street. I was like a Grim Reaper super tweaker. Pumping about. I was a guy that when you drove up, I feel better because there's that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm that guy. Right? because of my issues and my oddities, I brought a lot of negative attention on me. You know? I've been stabbed. I've been thrown in a dumpster. I've been thrown in a trash can upside down off a building. I've been beaten. I've been called every name. You think of it, I've been called that. This is not random. This is pervasive. This is my life. And I had a psychotic break, you know? I was not the person that anybody ever said, wow, he has potential, you know? And so as I share my story, like I go back and I just imagine, like, look at me, man. I have 8 kids that I'm fully aware of. I have 6 daughters and 2 little guys, a career. I'm color coordinated. All my hair's cut, all pretty. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting here smelling like soap, and I haven't thought of killing any of you. If you think Alcoholics Anonymous is about not drinking, if you think that's what this is all about, you've missed it. Alcoholics Anonymous is about change. And I've never changed anything. I have 100% success ratio at failing at every single thing I've ever tried. All I have ever done is read a little, write a little, pray a little, help a little, and go to bed. And while I sleep, something greater than me just changes me just a little. And then it gives me permission the next morning to try it again, to read a little, write a little, pray a little, help a little, and go to bed. And the days turn into weeks, and the weeks turn into months, and the months turn into years, it turned into decades. And now when I look back on my life, I was just telling Joel as we were driving up here, I can't define my life anything other than remarkable. I was a little Mormon kid. That says a lot, right? We had 3 records in my house: the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, John Denver, Rocky Mountain High, and a pirate copy of Jesus Christ Superstar. That was my rock, okay? So I have never even had a Pepsi. I'm a bit sheltered, you know what I mean? But this is my big day. I'm 15 years old, and Matt Kelly threw me down the bus steps. He threw me face forward down the bus steps. And what he did is he pulled my backpack back, and my arms went back like this, and then he shoved, and I went face forward. Then he threw the backpack on me, and he shouted a word, and I hit the curb. And when I hit the curb, a little blood came out of my mouth, and I laid on the curb stunned and shocked. And I heard all the kids laughing. That's what I heard in my head. And the bus driver asked me to get my feet off the steps because he wanted to shut the door, so he needs to drive away. So I pulled my knees into my chest and I laid in the fetal position on the ground. And as the bus drove away, something clicked inside of me, man. And when I got up, I used to be a person that daydreamed, like, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you. But now I was like, I'm done, I'm doing it, see? I'm going to go get my dad's 357. I'm going to walk 2 miles over to Matt's house. I'm going to shoot him dead on his doorstep. Shoot myself, and then you guys can see what you've been doing to me, you know? And on my way to commit murder, I saw a cigarette on the ground. And I never even had a Pepsi. And I'm like, you're going to commit murder. You might as well try some new stuff on the way out, you know? So I got that sun-baked, footprint-smushed Marlboro cigarette, man. And some kitchen matches. It went up on my mom's house and sparked it. And I remember that nicotine. I was like, I'm loaded. Whoa, this is what it feels like, you know? And then I came down. Something must have changed in me because David came up on me. Now, David's got that long, black Arapaho hair, dude. He's wearing the Ozzy Osbourne Bach at the Moon album shirt on. He's like, bro, you want to go smoke? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a smoker. Bring it, you know? And we went to his house, and we smoked something else, and we watched Mr. Rogers, and we laughed, dude. It was a great time. And he goes, you want to go to a party? And I'm like thinking, yeah, I'm going to kill Matt. Let's party first, you know? And we went to a place called McCormick Ranch in Scottsdale. And it's like yesterday, man, I'm wearing this V-cut black shirt with like zippers on it, dude. I'm so white, you can see the pulmonary function through my chest, dude. Like, I got zits like a Milky Way all over me, dude. I got that mullet. I got some Velcro Pumas. I walked in with swag, you know? And we went to this house party, and when I first walk in, this is what I first hear. I hear Danzig, you know, Metallica, Megadeth, Kiss, you know, like devil music, you know what I mean? And I was like, and it talked to me. It was like, oh, yeah. You know? And it was like, I saw a sea of kids, man. Like, no adult supervision, no opening prayer, no Subway sandwich. Just a bunch of kids, man. Then I see this chick come by in a bra. I was like, thank you, Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, I like to party. This is fun. And they took me back to this big barrel thing with a pump on it and a little hose. You guys ever seen one? Okay, so I'm pumping it. I got my little cup, dude. I have a head on my beer like that, little stripe, like a beer lid on the bottom. You know what I mean? Now I'm sitting, look at that beer, man. Now when I did my first step with my first sponsor, he had me read the first 8 pages of Bill's story and identify where I thought and felt and drank like Bill. And in the very first paragraph, second paragraph, he talks about ignoring the strong warnings and prejudice concerning drink. That his people, they had concerns with drink. I'm supposed to sell Jesus door to door on a bicycle in Guam. I'm stoned and I'm ready to go kill Matt. We're going to give this a shot. You know what I mean? So I let the beer just go right through the foam and it's like, I have no idea what your first night of drinking was like. But for me, it was like that first hit. It was like, it turned me and took me to a place called I Like It Like That. You know what I mean? And it like lit me up. And beer's a depressant, but it turned me on, man. And I'm drinking. And I'm starting to dance to Morris Day and the Time, dude. I'm like cranking it with my new friends. And I did shots of gin, shots of tequila. You guys know what Everclear is? Alcoholics. And I did shots of Everclear. That hurts. You know what I mean? That hurts, right? But nothing stopped me, man. I got so drunk. I remember going into the bathroom, looking at myself, going, yeah. You know, like there's a certain amount of alcohol that seemed to make this all work. You know what I mean? And it must have worked out pretty good, too, because Denise Johnson came up on me. I got lit, low, and laid my very first night, and that's a powerful experience for a virgin homicidal, suicidal Mormon dork. Give me a yeah. That was the greatest night of my life. And I was in a meeting one time, and there's this lady. I would never trade the worst day of sobriety for the best day of drinking. Forget you. You can't have that night. That was the greatest night of my life. I want that night to go on forever. You know what I mean? And the best part, I totally forgot to kill Matt. Look what alcohol does to me, man. I don't know what it does to you. I don't drink to escape. I drink to be a part of. I drink to turn the fear off and be a part of. I had friends that night. A girl thought I was attractive. I had new music, new experiences. You should want me drunk. It should be a city ordinance. I'm a danger to myself and others. You get me drunk and all of a sudden I'm a fun lover. I mean, that's what you want to do. Did we get Dodd drunk yet? Did we get him drunk yet? I mean, you should want me drinking. It changed my whole perspective. I gave and surrendered myself to that immediately. I was like, okay, you know that whole church thing, all that, that's mythology. You can keep the cult and the mythology and all that crap. I just threw it all up into the wind. And I said, I don't care about my morals. I don't care about my family or my family values, education. I don't care about any of those things. You can have it all. All I want is a life worth living. Mine's not worth living, you know? And I just went staged over right into alcohol. And I went to go live like that, man. And my hair grew out like Winger. You know what I mean? I'm wearing black shirt. I got swag. I'm like, hey, what's up? You know? And I'm still 15. I come up on my mom. I'm like, hey, I need the Buick Regal station wagon. I'm going out to party, you know? And my mom's like, I don't know what party means, but you're 15. You're not taking the car? And my mom takes half of Valium so she can get some rest at night. So I crushed 3 and I put in a Fresca and knocked her out. That, never thought of it. You know what I mean? I start real still, you know what I mean? And I went out and party like 5 in the morning. Come back. She moved. Now I'm afraid I might have killed her. You know? And so 10 o'clock, my mom's like, I slept so good. I'm like, 3, that's your dose. I will drug you, okay? This is the kind of alcohol. I am a shoplifter, man. I am a bike scooter. I have great jobs. I got jobs at Kentucky Fried Chicken, Burger King, Taco Bell. I got fired from Wendy's in a day. You know what I mean? I'm the kind of guy that you do not leave unattended without adult supervision in your bathroom. I will rob you. Do not let me hang out with your girlfriend. I'm going for it. I use fake accents, fake names, fake backstories. I'm a creature. I get arrested so often it's a mode of transportation. And man, I could go on and on and on. It just ends up with me in the park. And I could tell you all the big nights. You know, I could tell you about the nights I burned off my eyebrows. I could tell you about the time I went, psh, I hope that's a girl. I mean, I've had some big nights. It has no bearing on me being an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is when I take a drink, I cannot accurately predict what's going to happen next. It's in charge. And even though it would be a good idea not to take that first drink, I don't know how to do that. As a matter of fact, if that's all you got from me, I don't want it. If all you got is don't drink no matter what, I can't live to that ideal. That suggests that maybe I have some power over something I don't have any power over. And if all you're going to do is take my alcohol away and leave me with nothing else, you're just going to get Matt killed. I go back to psychotic. So what I did is I decided to move and leave Arizona and move to Huntington Beach, California. It was getting hot in Arizona. And when I brought me to Huntington Beach, I brought me. And it just progressed from right there. And I was 25 years old, and I'm in my walk-in closet in Huntington Beach. And I remember I had a 38 special nickel plate long nose, and I have it in my mouth, and I got the trigger pulled back. I'm in my underwear. I'm sitting there with a bottle of Absenta, and I'm good and drunk. And alcohol and I had made a deal. Like, if you give me a life worth living, I'll give you my life. And it was taking my life drunk now. And I remember saying the only prayer I hadn't said a prayer or talked to anything that looked like God for 10 years. And the only thing I said that night is, you're going to have to stop me. And I got arrested that night. I got arrested for drinking too much in a place called Live Bait in Seal Beach, you know. And I remember when the police officer pulled me over on Main Street saying, like, hey, where are you going? I said, I'm following 2 girls home. He goes, well, you're doing 100 miles per hour. That's not following. That's called chasing. Oh. Maybe they weren't as excited as I thought. And so I got sentenced to jail and sentenced to AA that night. And so I showed up on a court card. I don't know if there's a court carder in here, but I got sentenced to 2 signatures. That's all I needed, and it only took 1. It took 1 because of June 2 of 93. I won't go into the story of June 2. I will just tell you it was so life-threatening, so shameful, so horrific, so uncomfortable, that on June 3, I was open to the idea of seeing what you guys had to offer. And I came to a place called Howe Hall in Huntington Beach. And I walked into this place early because I've got emotional and mental issues, and I have trust problems, and I wanted to get the lay of the land. So when I walk in, I see a bunch of like what looks like good wheelchairs, and it smells like cat pee in the room, dude. And you got a little to-do list on the wall, and you got your little blue book Bible things in the back corner, and you got a cartoon picture of 3 guys in bed, not sure what your get down is. You know what I mean? And I go in the back, and I see some old palsy shake old guy scooping coffee, dude, and nobody's throwing him down. He's just scooping, you know? And I walk back to the coffee guy, and I was like, hey, I'm crazy, and I need to get this sign. Can you help me? Hey, if you're new and you don't want to get sober in AA, do not say that to an old person, because that translates to, will you be my sponsor? That's what that means. That's what I found out, you know. Now, his name was Carl, okay? That's why I was like, Carl, because he sounded like Arnie. He's like, my name is Carl, okay? And he said, sit down and I'll help you, sit down. So I sit down at the table and I'm watching you guys, man. You guys got little nicknames like Big Book Bob and Stinky Pete. And you got little speeches you practice in front of the mirror. And you got little one-liners that let go of something and one day to something and an easy something. And you guys, you could say little buddy fuzzy slipper nipple. And you're like, yay, keep coming back. It doesn't make any sense, man. I wasn't getting what you were laying down. It was really uncomfortable for me. And all of a sudden it hit me. Oh my God, I realize how you guys do this. See, what you guys do is you go forehead to forehead. I won't drink if you don't drink. I won't drink if you don't drink. You call me every day and I'll call you every day. We'll hang out with each other every single day. We'll go to a meeting every single day or read the big book every single day. Get rid of your friends. Get rid of your friends. Two, cut, that's a cult. And as soon as I realized you're a cult, I was like, oh, no. And there's this little kid next to me. He's like, so super sober. He's like, oh, super sober. He's like, oh, it's so beautiful. When we get done, we hold hands and pray. And I'm like, kill you. I'm back. You're not touching me, okay? I don't want nothing. I don't want to do this. See, all I heard was don't drink. Don't drink. We're happy we don't drink. We don't drink anymore. Isn't that great? We don't drink. You don't drink. I don't drink. We don't drink anymore. Isn't that great? We're great because we don't drink. When I don't drink, I want to kill me and kill you. I didn't hear what was necessary for me. So I decided I'm going to go to Lucky John's. I'm going to shoot pool. I'm going to find something chickish. Have a good night, and we'll come back and try this tomorrow. You know what I mean? And then as I'm running out of AA. Your meeting didn't save me. Your little posse didn't do it. I'm leaving. And this is when good 12-step shows up. Good 12-step. Carl got between me and the door. See, he knew a remarkable thing had happened in my life. Something greater than my alcoholism had allowed me to walk in the room with you. But what's waiting for me right out that door is alcoholism. I don't know what alcoholism is. I don't know what I need to fix. I don't know why I should need to fix it. I have just miraculously come in here, and 99% of us never make it in here. I'm here. I have a chance. And he got between me and the door, and he gave me a book. I thought we all got one. I was like, thanks, you know? And he gives me a key. And I saw you got little happy buttons for doing special things. You know what I mean? So I thought this was like my key to life. You know what I mean? And then he asks, like, what time I get off work? And I was like, 5. And he goes, and what's your address? And I gave him my real address because I was court ordered to be here. So I didn't know if it was illegal to give him the fake one. And then I was like, dude, you ask for a lot of information for an anonymous program, you know? He goes, we made you the coffee maker. And I'm like, what does that mean? He goes, you need to come back early, 30 minutes early, and make the coffee every Thursday for the next 6 months. And I was like, right then and there, you saved my life. See, I have no idea why coffee keeps you sober, but something hit me like, I'm going to make the best damn coffee they have ever had. I know coffee. I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken. You know what I mean? Like, I picture somebody going, who made this fine coffee? You know what I mean? So I left, and I went to Vaughn's, not Lucky John's. I fill my car full of coffee stuff, right? And I go to my house, you know what I mean? And I live in an unsober, sober living environment. You know what I mean? Like, so I was in this meeting, and there's this little girl. She's like, oh, the poor little thing. She goes, and then Brenda, she drank a lot of NyQuil, and it seemed to make her a little messy up. And I got triggered, so I smoked meth. I'm like, I'm sorry that happened to you. You know what I mean? I really am. You walk into my house, it's like, it's strip pool all night long. You just put your cigarettes out on the shaggy carpet. We have a couch made out of cases of beer, right? We have an entire refrigerator full of booze and a pack of hot dogs. Like, that's our house. We got a plumber. There's some carpenter guy. There's a lawyer. There's usually a kid in a diaper. There's a bunch of girls in the house. And rarely is anybody wearing clothes. You will hear Metallica from down the street, okay? So here I come with my big book and all the coffee junk, and they're like, "Well, what's your meeting?" I'm like, "Oh my God!" You know what I mean? I run up to my door and my bedroom, and I slam the door and I hide. You gotta keep me sober. I make coffee, you know. And I went to bed. I woke up the next morning going, "Damn!" You know, I'm 25 years old. You know, when I'm 75, I'll be 50 years sober. That's like a record, you know. And And I figured, like, what a blessing in your life I'll be. You know, I was, like, super excited about being, I'm super sober, you know what I mean? And then by noon, alcoholism, because, like, stop. You're not going to do that. You're going to go home. You're going to get that cool shirt on, that one you wear every single time you go out. You're going to get your pull stick. You're going to get in the car, go to Lucky John's, and wait for further instructions. And I'm like, okay. I have no power over that. Alcoholism's back, right? So as I go home to just throw it all away, right, there's Carl sitting out front of my house smoking a cigarette like an Amway stalker, dude. Apparently, we had a date, okay? And he's just waiting there, and he says, get in the car. Well, I don't know if it's illegal to tell him no, so for all intents and purposes, he kidnapped me, dude. He throws me in the car, and he says, we're going to go give it away. I don't know what we got. He goes, sobriety, and I'm like, dude, I don't know if you're counting, but I got like one day. He goes, hey, listen, you know all those meetings where they say you can't give something away you don't got? You don't listen to them. I want you to flip it around. You get what you give. You get what you give. You get an hour of sobriety, and if you don't give a message back just for a few minutes, you do not get another hour. It goes, the message of the meeting gets taken away from you on the way to the car. If you got a day, give an hour so you can have another day. Give it. Give it, and you will get it. Take it, and it'll be taken from you. And you are selfish. You need to give a lot. I was like, damn, he knows me. He's talking kind of intense, you know what I mean? Like, and he took me to a place that changed my life. It's a place called Charlie Street. And Charlie Street, if anybody knows where Charlie Street is, the very first detox and treatment center in Orange County, 1956, for primarily homeless and indigent men. I am a homeless and indigent man. That's my past. I met Carl in a suit. How would he know that? And we go into Charlie Street, and I see my brothers, man. I see them there, and I'm watching you. And you guys were not being condescending. You were not standing on a box and talking down to the poor little guys. You were getting eye to eye with them, man. You were sharing your truth. You were combing their hair and feeding them soup and reading your book and saying, me too. And I remember just looking at this going, God, what is this? Carl, what is this? He goes, oh, yeah. Those meetings, you should go to a bunch of them. They're real important. It's just not what we do, though. Meetings are not what we do. Meetings are where we come to report on what we're doing. And if you're not doing anything, shh. But you can have a report with one day of sobriety. I came in here, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm holding on. Report. You can have 30 days of sobriety. I got a sponsor. I rarely call her. I've gone to 3 meetings a week. I'm doing him, and her. But I'm still sober. You can have 1 year of sobriety. I've got a sponsor. I've got sponsees who have sponsees. I use the steps as tools in my life, the traditions as relationship guides. I have a God of my understanding. I go to 3 meetings a week with commitments. I have a home group. My life has never been the same. I am better, the best person I've ever been in my life. I'm not better than you. I'm not lesser than you. I'm continuously growing. Those are reports. Meetings are where we come to report on what we're doing. He said, this is what we do. We bring the message of recovery to those who need it. These men can't get to the message, so go bring it to them. And I was like, what message I got, you know? So I walk up to this guy, and he's leaning against the wall. And he just kind of sits up, and he looks at me with like these dazed eyes, and goes, dude, how do you stay sober? I make coffee. Simple lines. And he was like, wow, profound. You know, and then we just sat and told war stories. You know, like, I did this and that hurt. And he's like, yeah, I did this and that hurt. And I said, I don't want to do that anymore. And he goes, me neither. And I was like, Carl, tag. You know, and I, when I get in the car, I was like, I had this feeling, and there was, I'm silent in the car, and I was like, God, just maybe. Maybe, just maybe, the worst things that's happened to me could be useful in a place like this. Maybe, just maybe, my arrest could be useful in a place like this. Maybe my mental issues could be useful in a place like this. Maybe my dishonesty, my brokenness could be useful in a place like this. Maybe if I got sober and stayed sober, I could have some value in this world in a place like this. And it fired me up, and Carl asked me if I was thirsty, and I said, absolutely not. He goes, great, I'm taking you to a meeting. He took me to an old-timers meeting where men older than Moses were sitting in a circle. And he walked in, he said, the coffee maker's here. Carl picked me up 6 days in a row and got me 6 coffee commitments. I was the effing caffeine connection for Huntington Beach, California for 2 years, man. He was big on those kind of commitments. He was big on having service commitments. He's like, you're being selfish. Give it away. You got a message? Go give it away. You got a car? Give it right away. You're sitting in a meeting and somebody walks by you, give them your handshake. Give it away. Give the message away. Give sobriety away and get it. He kept saying it over and over again. He never let me read by myself. I have a car. He never let me drive anywhere by myself. He picked me up every day. We read together. He committed fraud to get me to write. Hey, dude, you want to come to my house for pizza? Yeah, I want free pizza. I come to his house. You want pizza? Yeah, right. Right? Pizza. Right? Pizza. And we rode like that. I mean, Carl was either the most lonely member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was his new friend, you know? Or maybe he's that one sponsor who goes, this one's not going to drink. You know, no matter what, he was guarding me. Or maybe he just read that chapter about working with others where it talks about working day by day with the new man. Not week by week or month by month, but day by day with the new man. And he worked like that with me. And that went on for 5 years, and a lot changed in my life. I changed a lot, you know. And the only thing we ever argued about was he kept saying to find God. And I kept saying, there's no such thing, man. I like that good orderly direction thing, group of drunks thing, man. You just tell me what to do, and I do it. Look, 5 years. Man, I had my hairs cut, man. I was like, my suits were getting bought in Nordstrom's. I had my own place now. I had a car with a top that came down. I had a girl that said she was my girlfriend. Wasn't all in my head. You know what I mean? Like, whole new experience for me, you know what I mean? And he just kept saying, Todd, one day I won't be here. I can't be your higher power. One day I will not be here, and you will come to a midnight, and you will find out if the power greater than yourself that you picked for yourself is strong enough to protect you. And boy, he left. He left just in a few months. He moved to Philadelphia. He left me 5 years super sober. And I don't know really, and I got to be honest, I don't know exactly how this all went down. I just remember I watched Star Trek one night rather than going into a meeting. And I had such a great night that I decided to do it the next night. And that went on for a year. I never came back to another meeting for a year. And the only reason I came back that sixth year was to get a chip for my mom. Because let's face it, when you drug your mother, she deserves a coin. Yeah? Right? And she liked them chips. And so then I just left again. And I went on a whole nother year. You know, I was at a conference one time. I was like, 2 years, two meetings, no drinking. Oh, like they know what's going on with me. It was great. It was great, man. I made more money. I took all that time I was wasting in AA, reading the same crap with the same guys in the same meetings, the same way every day, living this hamster wheel life. I went out there and I got written up in the Washington Post and hiked the Sahara and was having all this exciting fun. And so the third year I came back, I came back to get my chip, and something happened that I'd never heard before. I got done giving my commemoration speech, and I did not hear any clapping. All I saw were looks of horror. Now, I don't know exactly what I said, but I'll paraphrase it, kind of like, hey, this is a cult. You guys are just hiding in here. All you've done is transfer addictions from alcohol to AA. You guys are like borrowing money from each other, and you're dueling each other, and working with each other, and going to meetings with each other, and you're like super sober, you know, dodgeball tournaments. All you're doing is coming here reading the same book, same pages, same quotes, same things every single day. You've just given up your life. I have a much simpler program. It's a two-step program. It's called Get Sober, Get Some, you know? I'm making more money in a month than most of you are making in a year. I'm driving a car out there that most of you will never even have. I'm having the incredible life of my own. If you guys want to come out and find out about my two-step program and drop this loser thing, I will show you my way. The lady's like, do we clap? What do we do? So I walk out like waiting for you to all, you've got the answer, to come running out. You know what I mean? Like, huh, how'd you figure it out? You know, and I just, all I heard was laughter. So I didn't come back for 2 more years. That's 4 years and 2 meetings. Don't drink no matter what. Gotcha. It's third step prayer, seventh step prayer, serenity prayer, Lord's prayer every morning. Go out, do life, be a good guy, don't drink no matter what. Exactly what I did. There were some minor changes in my life. Right? Minor. Like, I gained 80 pounds. So I look like young Dana Shanta, you know what I mean, like in stretchy pants. And like I'm smoking two packs of cigarettes every single day. I'm shooting pool till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, 5, 6 nights a week. I'm having sex and cheating on my wife with anything that looks like a girl that will let me on a consistent basis. I cry. I have spontaneous crying fits. I cry at stoplights. I cry on the couch. I cry in the backyard. I cry in the jacuzzi. And I also have rage fits. Now I'm getting really angry. I'm starting fights everywhere. I got armed escort off the premises at Bank of America because I started a fight in the teller line. I pulled the drive-thru captain at a Del Taco into my car and beat his ass. Okay? I'm starting to plot on my neighbor Brian. I don't like the way he's looking at me, and I'm plotting on his life. I've got a .357 in my glove compartment. I've got a Winchester in my trunk, and I'm not a hunter. Oh, almost forgot. I'm embezzling from my own company, and I started a little escort service. Now I'm a pimp. I'm a fat, homicidal, suicidal, Santa-smoking hooker pimp. Other than that, it was going pretty good, you know what I mean? Like, hey, can I make a suggestion? I don't know what you want to tell you, but can you not tell me don't drink no matter what? You keep suggesting to me when you say don't drink no matter what, that I have, that first step says I'm powerless over alcohol unless I really, really, really try. Maybe you should suggest me do something that will give me access to power that will deliver me from what alcoholism truly is. Call your sponsor no matter what. Find a God of your understanding no matter what. Go to a meeting no matter what. Do and use the steps no matter what. Work with a sponsee no matter what. Get some commitments no matter what. Maybe you should suggest the work that gives me access to the power that can deliver me from this, because now I'm in the grip of alcoholism. I know where the meetings are. I even think once in a while, I think I should go to a meeting, and that voice says, you will not. I can't get there to save my life, so stop worrying about, you know, whether I'm being lazy or belligerent or egotistical. I can't get to you because I don't have permission. And alcoholism just hasn't decided to make me drink yet. It's getting a kick out of watching me think that I have power. It's getting a kick out of you talking behind my back. Hey, did you hear about Todd? He's crushing it. He's making all kinds of money. He doesn't drink and he doesn't do AA. Really? We should try that and see how it works. I'm in my office. I have 86 employees. I'm hiding in my office like a tweaker. I'm like, what? And it's this little skinny kid named Kyle. And he goes, hey, I just started here yesterday, and I heard you haven't had a drink in 9 years. And I'm like, yeah, it's great. And he goes, well, I think I'm an alcoholic. Can you give me a ride to a meeting? And I'm like, oh, crap. And I slam the door in his face. I'm a fat, homicidal, suicidal, Santa-smoking hooker pimp, but I don't want nobody knowing I don't go to AA. I wouldn't want to ruin my reputation. You know what I mean? Like... So I open the door and I go, El Toro Club, Mission Viejo, 5:30, it's my favorite. He goes, no, dude, I need a ride. And that hits me. There's a strip club in the parking lot called the Library. What I can do is give him a ride to his meeting, then I can go have my own meeting, and then I can pick him up from his meeting, and I got an alibi. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give you a ride. So as we're driving there, I'm kind of excited about my plan. He goes like this, will you sponsor me? I want what you have. You're going to need some guns and some strippers. Because my program's complicated. He looks at me and he's like, yeah, I actually said to him, well, before I say what I said, I'm just going to tell you the moment he asked me that question, what really came over me was not that joke. What really came over me is an overwhelming desire to help him. My God lives in him, asking for my help. My God lives in Kyle asking for my help. And by simply asking for my help, my God can help me. Boom. I need you, if you're new in here, to ask for my help. I need you to ask me to come up and speak. I need you to ask me to serve. Because the moment you ask for my help, my God lives there. And the moment Kyle asked for my help, my God delivered me into this overwhelming sense of, we got to get better. We have to help Kyle. Dude, I actually said, I will show you my way. In my head, I'm like, I got to get sober real quick. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I got to sponsor. You know what I mean? Like, I went into the meeting. I was like, okay, all right, I need two of them. Book things. Hey, old guy, what's your name? Mike, you're my new sponsor. I got a hooker thing we need to talk about. Okay, first, who makes the coffee? This guy there making the coffee. I go, hey, dude, I need to make the coffee. He's like, oh, give me the coffee. took that coffee, man. I didn't know if it was a coffee or the old guy or the book things or the home group or what it was, but we got to get me better. We got to help Kyle. Dude, we did Kyle's first step at Gold Hill Tavern over a glass of Red Bull and ice and a game of pool, right? He's like, I don't think we should be in a bar. And you go, you can't hide from booze, Kyle. It's everywhere. Okay? All right? And I was like, by the time it got to his third step, we're both holding hands right around my knees, and I'm crying. Like, I'm back, you know? And he's like, dude, you're manic, you know? And so when I moved to Temecula for a brief minute, I took my 10-year chip in Temecula. When I got there, I took a 10-year chip. Everybody thought I was super sober. I was like 93 days back in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was wearing a gun. I was watching some guy talk out of his neck, trying to figure out whether I shoot him in his car or just beat his butt. I just want you to know, like, there's a lot of us, and you're in this room, and you know who I'm talking to. You're trying to look like your time. You're trying to look like you're 10 or 20 or 30, but you know what you've been doing. We're not looking. And that's not sobriety. That's just not drinking. And I just invite you to recognize, I know what that feels like, man. I know what it feels like to, I'm going to say that at the next meeting. That was cool. And that's how, oh, how's it going? It's going great. And carry a big book I never read. And sit in that meeting and just fake it. And I went to the Robber's Roost, and I got this new sponsor named Bob. And Kip Collins walked up on me, and he'd seen me three meetings. And this old gangster put his hands on my left and right shoulder, and he looks at me, and he goes, When the fake version of us does the steps, we get drunk. And when the real version of us does the steps, we get real different. I hope you get real soon, because I'd love to see you stay. And he walks away. And he convicted me, man. Right there on the spot, there was some part of me that was like, fine. Okay? I'll do it. I'll do whatever you say. I'll do it. I'll do the prayers. I'll do whatever's in the book. I'll do what my sponsor says. I will not negotiate. I want to see, okay? I want to see if you can make a guy like me have integrity. Can you help a guy like me stop worrying about the past, the shame? Can you help me sleep at night, finally? Can you help me wake up with a sense of hope that life is actually worth living? Can you give me a relationship that doesn't cost money? Can you change my life if I give you all of mine? If I give you all my action, what can you do with it? I want to see. And I don't know what a four-step looks like. I don't know about step of the month. I just know about, like, if you get up at 6 a.m. and you start writing vigorously, you can get 16 pages front and back done before 2. If you just never leave and go at it like it's your life that is in the balance. And when I got done, it said on page 75, if you know who's supposed to hear, you don't waste any time. My sponsor opens the door. Hi. I go, you need to hear this. He goes, okay. And I walked him in the back and I said, you need to listen to this. I'm going to tell you everything. And I started telling him. You know those secrets I never said I would share? I never shared. They should never see light. And I let them out. And there was a couple that I was like, right before they came out of my mouth, I was like, this is not a good idea. And I let them out. And he just listened to me. He listened to me. And when he got all done, when I got it all out, he looked at me with the most loving voice. He said, you might need outside help. Whatever. And he wasn't even talking about a psychiatrist. He was talking about what a home group really is. See, a home group isn't your favorite. You don't call it your home group just because you just like all go to Denny's together and you hang out and you go to it. It's your favorite little place where everybody loves you so much. A home group is a library of experience, strength, and hope. A home group has a purpose of bringing the message of recovery as a group. We're not in the advice business. We're in the demonstration business. We're in the experience, strength, and hope business. If you don't have any experience or strength or hope in something that I'm going through, don't give me any advice. And if I share in a more specific way with my home group, see, my fifth step was practice with Bob. The rest of my home group got to know me very, very well. And I got to know them very, very well. So I know who to go to when I have crime and sobriety. Divorce or bankruptcy or cancer and sobriety. I have men who have gone through that with steps and traditions and premium success. And I can go and say, what did you do? I'm going to give you an example. Okay? I have these 8 kids, and one of my kids, my oldest daughter, gave me a gift about 4 years ago that changed my life. She gave me, I have 6 daughters, so you can imagine, my grandson Jackson. I taught him how to walk, man. That kid is the light of my life. And 2 years ago, I was on my way to speak in Long Beach, and I got the word that he went through the doggy door when nobody was looking, went in the backyard, went in the pool, drowned, and died. What's your advice? What pages do I read? What prayers do I shout out? What's your experience, strength, and hope? Because you get real quiet in here. But out there, you're giving each other a lot of advice. If you haven't had a child die in your arms, you don't know what that feels like, and you haven't gotten through with steps and traditions, the best you can do for me is say, I'm sorry for your loss, and if there's anything I can do for you, I'll be there. And that's it. I spoke at the San Diego Convention with a man named Charles K. And Charles lost his son. And Charles went through that with grief recovery, steps and traditions, and got his family through it. So I called Charles and I said, Charles, thank you for sharing your story with me. I did not think I would ever have to ask for this, but I need you to sponsor me through this. And he walked me day by day how to heal my family and heal myself. We are in the experience, strength, and hope business, but if you keep your experience a secret, we don't know who to go to. There is working above and below the line of anonymity. And there is a place to get real. Does that make sense? Yes or no? I started sharing my truth with my men. I started making amends. I started, to this day, fourth and fifth step workshops, helping men and women find their sex ideals, their relationship ideals, and live up to them. Bringing money, food, and clothes to female shelters to try to give back what I took it. Counsel. I'm a coach and a life coach and a counselor, and I work with many women and their children and couples to try to give back. Probably give about 20% of my time away, trying to make back for what I had taken for so many years. You know, when I came to my mom, she just kept saying things like, just keep giving me those chips. And then something spectacular happened. I started to notice when I was in the movie theater and I was watching Toy Story with my kids, and I start to cry. The hell is so sad when he gives away his puppets? I'm like, what's going on? You know what I mean? I'm starting to have feelings. I find a wallet with $2,000 in it in cash and no ID, and I bring it back. Right when I bring it back to the gas attendant, this little Mexican man comes up and goes, have you seen a wallet? And all of his rent money was in this wallet, and I go, I found it for you. I start to, I'm not shoplifting anymore. I'm telling the truth now. I'm starting to feel feelings. I remember the first time I slept with my legs straight out and woke up refreshed. I'm changing. And then I get a phone call. My mommy, this is May of 2005, my mom calls me. My mom says, honey, I've been lying to you. I have nowhere to live, and I have no money, and I have no clothing, and I have no items. Everything I own got burnt in a fire just 2 days ago. And I have stage 4 cancer, and I'm going to die. And I finally realized that, man, I can give my mom some. I have a house. I got my mom, man. I brought my mom into my house, and I gave her my master bedroom, and I gave her my car, and I gave her an allowance, and I told my mom, no matter how long or short your days are, you're done. I got you. I will comb your wig, and I will massage your feet. And mom, when you transition, I'll be there to hold you. And it was beautiful. Can you imagine it? I could finally give my mom something more than a chip, because I have a God of my understanding and a home group, and I have the Spirit in me. And it was a beautiful experience, except for one thing. Homegirl got better. Called it a miracle, you know. She's been 18 years, okay? She's like, it's a little excessive. I mean, I only drugged her like 5 times. I don't want to say, like, Bob's like, living amends, keep it up. You know, like, okay. She's in Scotland right now enjoying herself, and she'll be back home soon. And, but what was happening while mom was dying, which was really interesting, is I book a trip for Paris to celebrate my mom's life, and when I get my international checkup, comes to find out I have stage 4 cancer. I had melanoma that had got into my life, into my voice box, and was in my lymph nodes, and was moving through my body. And my doctor had me sit down and told me, you have less than 4 to 6 months to live. This is a 90-something percent chance. I need you to go home, have a very serious conversation with your family, make sure your life insurance and finances are in order. I walked in trying to think of my mom. I walked out dying. I get in the car. I don't know what you would do, but I started to cry. I can't believe this, man. I'm finally like sober. I'm finally like emotional. I finally have God in my life. I finally have sponsees who have sponsees who have sponsees. I'm doing the right things. And now you want to take my life, you know? So I call my sponsor because I want to gripe. And he doesn't answer. So I call my ground sponsor, Kip, and he doesn't answer. So I call his sponsor, Pat, and he doesn't answer. So I call my great-great-grand sponsor, Harry. I called an 86-year-old man and told him I'm afraid of dying of cancer. And Harry goes, me too, when you going? Old people are rude. Because you're being really selfish. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, all this, like, listen. And I want you to all hear this, really hear this a little bit well. Where your feet are right now at this exact second, exactly where your feet are, if you look down and look around, we are okay. At this exact second, at this exact moment, you're okay. You have all the steps, all the traditions, all the God, all the fellowship, all the power right now, access to it to cope with where your feet are right now. And when you take a step, you will have new tools, new power, and new options. When we are right where we're at the moment, it might not be okay, but we will be. And he said the fastest way to get where your feet are is to help someone else. Be of service. You know? And I was just like, okay, Harry. And I remember getting this phone call from an Al-Anon woman. She's like, oh my God, my son just stole my car. You know what I mean? And he's out there driving around without the car. I think he's probably drinking. I what do I do? And I'm like, Jackie, I just found out I have cancer and I'm going to die. And she goes, oh my God. Oh my God. Do you know there's no insurance on my car? I'm like, oh my God. Okay, let's talk about you then. Okay. That didn't work out. Victim card. Victim tennis. You know what I mean? Like, and by the time I felt better. I hung up and helped Jackie and I felt better. And that's what Harry taught me. When I feel really afraid, sometimes I'll stop at a grocery store and put 10 grocery carts away that don't belong to me. Sometimes I'll just go over to McDonald's and buy 10 $1 sandwiches and hand them out to the first people who look hungry. Sometimes I'll just call sponsors on the phone and say, what can I do for you? Sometimes I'll just go to my wife and say, what can I do for you? I'm very careful to say, what can I do for you, not what can I get you? Because my wife will ask for a lot of money. I started making a difference in my life. What happened was I had a miracle healing. My mom and I, isn't that interesting that two miracles happened in our home? We were both bald as hell. No eyebrows, no hair, just living together, watching Abbott and Costello movies, making plans for the future. And yet she lived and I lived. Remarkable. I remember when I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then there was a time when I was sitting in Macedonia over at Lake Ohrid with the Macedonian dignitaries, Greek politicians, and the Albanian syndicate, and I was there to architect peace. Remember sitting in the embassy of Qatar, overlooking the White House, sitting with the Qatari ambassador and Marines and CIA, working on trying to get Marines across Qatar lines into Afghanistan to scuttle 4,000 student refugees out from the Taliban back to Doha safely. Remarkable. I remember watching the birth of all my daughters. My daughter is 18 years old. She wants to be a clinical psychologist, and she's in Belgium to go to university right now. Remarkable. They're better than me. It's been so interesting to watch it all change. Can you see? And so now, as I get up every day, I don't do much different than I did before. I read a little, I write a little, I pray a little, I help a little. And then I see the world through eyes that are accurate. And I'm changed just a little. And I've had these powerful experiences. I would say I've had some really cool life experiences. But most of my life experiences that are really, really remarkable are the ones that have happened actually in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys ever seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? Okay, there's a place called Norwalk, Metropolitan State Psychiatric Hospital. You guys, anybody in here know where that's at? Of course you do, Dave. Well, that place is built in the 1800s, a city block, and has barbed wire and electrified fences. It's my kind of place. I had Unit 407, the Criminally Insane Lifers Ward. Every Wednesday, I had a book study with these guys for years. So, like, you think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, these guys make them look balanced. These guys are the dangerous ones. They're never supposed to get out. If you saw what was in their folders, you'd just feel safer that they were there. But every Wednesday, I would sit in a room that was about as big as maybe that from that area right up to that wall. And we would get probably about eight of the men on the mod to come in and sit in that meeting. And they showed up every Wednesday enthusiastically. One night, I get a phone call from some guy named Chuck. And Chuck's like, hey, I want to know if I can go to that metro thing with you. And I'm like, how much time you got, Chuck? He goes, 10 years. Oh, great. Let me tell you where it's at. He goes, no, I know where it's at. And he hangs up. I'm like, rude. So when Chuck gets there, I decide I'm going to lecture this guy. He needs to understand what he's walking into. And I go, hey, Chuck, before we walk in there, I just want to let you know, don't stare at him. Don't touch him. Don't get too much in their inner space. He's like, dude, you don't need to tell me this. I'll be fine. I go, oh, great. Chuck's going to get us killed. So as we buzz in to the place tonight, normally there's about 8 guys. And tonight, like, every dude who's not on a chemical coma is in the room. It's packed with crazy. And I'm getting a little uncomfortable. That's a lot. And they're not looking at me. They're looking at Chuck. And they go, hey, Chuck. And I'm like, how do they know you, Chuck? And he goes, oh, I used to live here. What you doing back? That's crazy. You know what I mean? And what do you think the one question they had for Chuck was? How'd you get out, right? How'd you get out of here, Chuck? And Chuck's like, oh, dude, you got to listen to this. Those one of those dudes that came in with one of them blue little softbound blue books, and he says, if you read where it says read, and you write where it says write, and you pray where it says pray, and you help where it says help, you'll be sane and you'll be free. And I was so crazy, I didn't realize it was a metaphor. And so, like, I'm getting out. You know what I mean? So I read the words, and it had a little diagram how to do the 4-step, and then I shared it with one of you dudes, and I was about halfway through when the doctor comes and goes, weird thing, Chuck, you're sane, and we got to let you go. And it says you got to do this day by day with the new man, but I didn't know any new men. So I called the guy's phone number that was in the book. And he goes, who's this? It's Chuck from the Metropolitan State Psychiatric Prison. And he goes, where you at, Chuck? I'm out, and I'm looking for you. And that guy picked me up, and for the last 10 years, I've been picking men up off the street, combing their hair and feeding them soup and showing them how to get free. On my 10th birthday, my sponsor said, you've been given a lot. You need to go give it back. You need to give it back or you'll end up living where you were. Because you get what you give. And if you're not giving anything, you're not getting anything. So stop saying you did AA if you never gave it back. You should try our program. It's a really good one. It's got 12 steps. I want to tell you, there is no type. And when you come in, we don't have an application for you. Fill out your application. We go, oh, sorry, kitten. This is not going to work for you. Right? There's no type. It doesn't mental patient, gangster, teenager, old, gender 3 genders, 4 genders. It doesn't matter. Whatever's going on in your world, there's no type. You read a little, you write a little, you pray a little, and you help a little, and you do it with a sponsor and a fellowship and commitments, and then you go to bed. And while we sleep, just a little bit is changed in us. And then we wake up, and we're given the opportunity and the authority to try it again. And we read a little, and we write a little, and pray a little, and help a little, and go to bed. And while we sleep, we're changed just a little. And I promise you, because there's promises throughout the big book, days will turn into weeks, the weeks turn into months, the months turn into years, and the years turn into decades. And one day, you might just stand up here and say, wow, remarkable things have really followed. That's all I got for you guys. I'm going to stop talking.